This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Good morning to you, Laurie.
Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July right back to you. It is certainly, you know, an important holiday for so many reasons. And I would argue that in these times that we're living in right now, dangerous times due to the ideology of the far left that has taken root in this country, I don't think anything is more important for us to do than go back and think about what the 4th of July, you know, really means. And that's what I really want to try to do today. And I realize that, you know, there are still lots of other issues out there that we could talk about, and there are still some election issues that I really want to get to. But I thought today we'll just go ahead and dedicate ourselves to, you know, looking at the Declaration, and I'm going to go ahead and read it. And you're thinking, oh my God, he's going to read the Declaration. But I'm going to read it with some, you know, emphasis, and I may offer a few interpretations here and there.
Love it. You're going to read the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to read it.
Wow.
Then we're going to hear from Paul Harvey, okay? And Paul Harvey did this a few years ago, okay? But he basically took the last sentence out of the Declaration about our lives and our fortunes and our sacred honor of being dedicated to, okay? That he has this wonderful story about what that really meant to the signers of the Declaration, okay? So I want to play that. I first heard this. Cody Phillips had it at one of the think tank meetings a couple of months ago. And I think that it encapsulates the sacrifices that they were willing to make in order to become independent. And I don't think we can forget those things. I think it's because there are going to be some sacrifices coming up if the far left is not defeated in November. I hate to say it, but it is not going to be pretty, especially if there is election fraud, which we know they're capable of doing. So this whole question about our lives and our fortunes and our sacred honor, it's not some abstract thing from the past. It could very well become a reality today, unfortunately. So after that, I want to go back to the founders and say a few words about their ideas concerning virtue and freedom and educating the people. I think it's instructive to go back to that and listen to what they say and then put it within the context of some of the issues that we're dealing with today, okay? So, and then the last thing I want to do is let you hear America the Beautiful from Hillsdale College. And again, Hillsdale College is a monument to the freedom that we all, you know, love and want to have. And Hillsdale is one of the few places that doesn't take any federal money. They're totally independent of the federal government. And so one can trust what they're doing in terms of educating people, not on an ideological basis, but on the basis of, you know, ascertaining what the truth is as best we can about American history and other things, okay? So that's basically where the show is going to go today, Laurie. And
sounds
for those
good.
Of you who are out there, I do hope that you all have a wonderful 4th of July and that, you know, you will share not only what I'm doing here, but take your family. Read, if you don't want to read all of the Declaration, read those first couple of paragraphs. I think it's telling. And then put those flags out. I've already put some flags out. You know, I put my flags out on Friday, you know, the whole weekend before. And I think that, you know, it's just a demonstration of the love we have for this country and our willingness to continue to sacrifice our time and our efforts to make sure that this country stays the way it should stay and that these radical left-wingers are not going to be successful. That's really the bottom line for me. So, folks, grab your chairs. Here we go, okay? This is in Congress, July 4th, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 states, United States of America. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal sextation to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. Let me just editorialize here. What we're experiencing now and what these Democrats and these left-wing radicals are doing is not something that can be tolerated. And the Declaration certainly gives you full responsibility and the right to say no to what these folks are doing. Continuing, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce government and to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constitutes them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. Notice how they are delineating the issues. Just as we are delineating these issues today, we cannot have the FBI taking, you know, the liberties that they have taken with some of these people from the January 6th insurrection, so-called, and doing what they're doing. It is an outrage, and it has to stop. So here are some of the things that the founders talked about in terms of proof that that George III was a tyrant. He has refused to assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended to their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. I mean, this is Biden not doing anything about what's going on with the gasoline crisis that he created because they cut the production of oil. They want to get rid of what? Fossil fuels. It's absurd. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with these measures. You don't think they do that today? I mean, they make things extremely difficult for us. And I think that that's part and parcel of wearing people down. And we're not going to put up with it. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on their rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such disillusions to cause others to be elected whereby the legislative powers incapable of annihilation have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining, in the meantime, exposed to all dangers of invasions without and convulsing within. Don't you think that's what's happening on the border? I mean, do you think Texas and all those states on the border are under invasion and Biden and them are doing nothing? They have the audacity to say that the border is closed. I'm sorry, folks. It just doesn't wash. Continuing, he has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws of for naturalization of foreigners. Oh, my God. I mean, does that hit the nail on the head? I mean to tell you. Okay, continuing, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither and raising the condition of new appropriations of lands. Kind of spot on, folks. Continuing, he has obstructed the administration of justice. Well, here we go. You don't think that that's the case with the January 6th business of what's going on? You don't think that's the case with the border? I mean, just think about it. Continuing, by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. I mean, if there's anything that is impeachable, it's what Biden has done on the border and breaking all those laws that Congress has legitimately passed over the years. And he continues to do nothing to support those laws, which is his constitutional duty, but the hell with the constitutional duty, because they want the border open. Continuing, he has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Don't you think the federal bureaucracy kind of fits that one? Here we are. Continuing, he has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. I'm tempted to get into that one, but I'll continue. Okay, so listen, just in case you haven't, you know, been with us the whole time of this presentation, I've been reading the Declaration of Independence, okay? And I've been commenting on it because so much of what is in there is relevant to today. And this whole business with the Biden administration, as I've suggested to you, they are breaking the law.
It's like they're using it for a handbook.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
But in the wrong manner.
Right. So let me continue, okay? And for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Now, here's a mock trial. You don't think what's going on with the congressional, you know, January 6th investigation is nothing more than a Stalinist, you know, show trial? This is absurd, folks. And again, you know, the relevance of what the Bill of Attainder against the king is exactly what we are arguing about today over Biden and his illegal, illegitimate approach to law. Continuing, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in neighboring provinces, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. You don't think they're doing that? That's exactly what these Democrats are doing. Call it the Green New Deal. Call it critical race theory. Call it what you want. That's what they are doing. And for us to just let this happen is something we are not going to do. Continuing, for suspending our legislatures, declaring themselves invented with power to legislate for us in all cases. whatsoever. Don't you think that's what they're trying to do with education, taking it over completely? He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Well, guess what? You don't think Portland and all these places that were burned, Minneapolis in the summer of 2020, and these Democrats who were in charge of these towns do nothing? And they're still doing it. Still doing it. And nothing is going to change because they believe, given BLM and what Antifa want, it's a Marxist ideology that's driving these people, and we are not going to be cowed by them. Continuing, he is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and terror. Hey, guess what? You have all of these illegal immigrants coming across the border, and you know what? They're finding terrorists, people on the terrorist watch list. And that doesn't even account for the people who are not caught, who have just gotten away. That's what they call them. It's happening as we watch all of this. Continuing. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against the country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrection among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. Well, I mean, just think about all of these illegal aliens who are here and the horrible crimes that they have committed. That's exactly what this is all about. Continuing, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of free people. Nor have we been wanting in our attention to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlements here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow their usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in a war, in peace, friends. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, this is bolded, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. And that, as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. You know, we don't often look at this portion of the declaration. I mean, the focus is on the first couple of paragraphs and not much more. But when you read it, the relevance of what they were going through to what we're seeing happen in this country today is important. And it just gives voice to the reality that we must do as our forefathers did and just stop what is going on. Stop it through the normal, legitimate process of elections. But let me just tell you something. If you think 2020 was a fair election, free of fraud, free of any of the kind of manipulations that we know took place, you're kidding yourself. And if these Democrats try to do this again in 2022, this country's going to explode. So let's just think about this. I do want to just spend a few minutes taking the last sentence, which is a good lead-in to Paul Harvey's classic, Our Lives and Our Fortunes. And I think that if you just take a listen to this, it'll be a few minutes, but it's well worth listening to the sacrifices that the signers of the Declaration went through. Here we are.
Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey. You remember the cherry tree fiction. A long time after you have forgotten the more earth-shaking, history-making episodes in the life of George Washington, you have misplaced in your memory the details of Ben Franklin's statesmanship, but you remember his flying a kite. Joyce Kilmer was a great military hero. But the only thing you personally recall about him is his poetic tribute to trees. Maybe of this current decade, that which will be remembered best will not be its wars and its moon rockets or its crumbling frontiers or the giants who lived and died. Maybe all that'll survive to linger in the day-by-day vocabulary of generations yet unborn may be the songs of a Memphis minstrel or the reincarnation of electric automobiles. But for any eve of the 4th of July, I, Paul Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember. You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. It's in the last paragraph where you will recall when I remind you, it says, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated, 24 were lawyers and jurists, 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland, no more rule by redcoats. Below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy. And we were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry, there was no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardships. Jefferson finished a draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence, the names were kept secret for 6 months for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd face a hangman's rope. But they signed the pledge. And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ships swept from the seas. To pay his debts, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward, Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. And he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others, one of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war, and he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he too lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its more merciful bullets. I don't know what impression you had had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia. But I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say of it, they had learned that liberty is so much more important than security, that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price, and freedom was born.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's powerful.
I have chill bumps.
Well, folks, here, the point of this is to show that freedom is not free, and we are going through another period where the question of external attacks on us are very, very real, with China, this whole business with Russia, So we have to be aware of those external problems. I got that. But these internal problems, which, to be honest with you, the last time we really saw anything like what these BLM, Antifa, far-left Democrats, the last time we saw anything like this really was in the Cold War period. But during the Cold War, we came together as a people to resist communism. Today, I would argue that the resistance in terms of intellectually resisting communism, it's not there. And the arguments that these people put forth are just absolutely unsupportable from a historical perspective, from the perspective of freedom, and from the perspective of anything that really works. And yet, look at how many people have bought into this. This Democrat Party that is in charge today is determined to fundamentally change America. That's what Obama set out to do, and that's what they're doing today. And those portions of the Declaration that I read and pointed out to you in terms of the continuing struggle that we have to make in order to preserve freedom and liberty is apparent. It's not going away. As much as you'd like to think it, you know, all you have to do is just vote here and vote there. But even there, look at the voter participation here that in this last election. The runoff had a statewide 12% participation rate. And the argument that you know, the founders have made before is that essentially, you know, if you can't participate, then, and if you're going to remain silent, this was what Jefferson said, then that's how tyranny evolves. So I think as we conclude this show this morning, I really would like you to think carefully about the Declaration. Take a moment to read it yourself. You can get it online if you don't have a book that has it in there. But in closing, I'd like to go ahead and play Hillsdale College version of America the Beautiful. And I'm going to end on that note. Wish that all of you have had a wonderful 4th of July. I realize it's barbecue time and beach time and all like that, but the reality is it has a deeper meaning. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to think about what the 4th of July really means, because freedom is not free, and we need to be prepared to pay the price for it. Thank you all. Have a great 4th of July. See you next.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. The opinions and views of this program are not necessarily those of this station or management. If you missed part of the show and you would like to hear it later, you can listen to it at WABF1480.com.